No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
So that was Sweet Honey and the Rock with Give People the Right to Vote. Give people their right to vote. Hi, and welcome to Shadow Politics. My name is Maria Sanchez. My co-host, Senator Michael D. Brown, is on vacation, so he's unable to join us today. And as he always says, we hope that this show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you. And because of that, I'm so pleased that we've got George T. Farrell as our guest this afternoon. So here's how you can join in on the conversation if you're listening to us live. You can call us at 888-627-6008, or you can Skype your comments and questions to BBS Radio 1. And also, the BBS staff is going to be on vacation for the next 2 weeks, so we're probably going to be airing repurposed programs that we did in the past because we're without some kind of engineering going on, and we'll get into that at another time. But George has been a guest of my other iterations of programs. And interestingly enough, he was raised in the District of Columbia, so I think he's got a real interesting view that might be different from what a lot of the listeners to Shadow Politics are about. So, George, welcome to the program. Thank you so much for making the time and for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm pleased to be here, Maria. I always love your shows. It's a great source of information for people. I'm glad you're going to replay them. For people, we have so much going on in the country to talk about.
It's the truth. And George, if you don't mind, I'm going to give our listeners a little bit of a background about where you're coming from and who you are and what you've done. And then, of course, I would like you to embellish it with, since you lived it. But I love part of this is that you're the youngest of five children. You have four of your own. You were actually a Metro Police Department with the District of Columbia for 3 years, and then you went on to do other things. I first got you on my radar when you published your book in 2007, Angry Black Man Guide to Success. And we actually had a conversation back in the day. And then last year, you published something called Success is Colorblind. But one of the important reasons that we wanted to have you on the program and to have a conversation today is that you and your wife in 2015 established a super PAC called Black PAC, B-L-A-K-P-A-C. And your goal was to attract conservative minority voters. Now, here's a quote about you, George, that I think is actually unbelievable, but this is the quote: the most effective minority voter education program in election history was created by you.
Well, that's quite a quote.
I know. I did my research, and that came under your name. So, yes, there you go. And then you were instrumental in helping Jeb Bush with his second gubernatorial run, and then was appointed Florida Human Relations Commissioners. So what have you done lately?
Well, lately with Black PAC, we've been very active. We're just leaving Birmingham, Alabama, the birth of the civil rights movement. Attended church there this morning. It's just a phenomenal place to be. And they have a Senate election for Tuesday to replace Senator Sessions. And we wanted to get down there to get out to it, get out the vote movement, to make sure we elect a conservative for that election on Tuesday. We trained a lot of new young people in canvassing and getting out to vote. We delivered our message. We talked about opportunity and don't believe the hype of free stuff, that there is no free stuff. But there's always opportunity in America. We talked about education, the importance of education. And we talked about dreams that these kids had. Most of them wanted to be rappers, but some of them were smart enough to have a plan B. So we talked to them about their plan B in case the rap thing didn't work out.
So, George, how did you attract and recruit this group of volunteers?
We have a website. We have website, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn under Black Pack. Our Twitter is at Real Black Pack. We put that out there and people respond. We use our LinkedIn. We use a lot of social media. We have two Facebook pages, an Instagram page, and we just do a lot of social media. And it's at Real Black Pack is the Twitter, at R-E-A-L-B-L-A-K-P-A-C is our Twitter. Our Facebook is Black Pack, and our website is www.blakpac.com. And that's www.blakpac.gov also. So we have two websites.
So can you talk about, since this is just recent news that you're speaking to, what kind of personality profile, if you will, if you could make a broad generalization, were the folks that attracted and were responding to your outreach?
A lot of pastors and lawyers respond to our outreach. I'm not sure why, but pastors and religious folks get the message that we're teaching opportunity, we're teaching peace. It's almost like a continuation of Martin Luther King's work that we're doing. Because in some ways, I feel that we didn't complete the job. We shouldn't be 52 years later still dealing with race issues. Sometimes it's frustrating and depressing that you still have to deal with race issues. So it's a continuation of finding the right people. And the people we're looking for, it's kind of like a Michael Jackson kind of thing. We're looking for people that are leaders in both communities, leaders in whether it's a white community or a majority community or a Latin community. Because Black Pack stands for Black, Latin, Asian, and that's what we're looking for. We're looking for people that lead in their own communities, but also leaders in the other communities, because you cannot lead in just one community. And so we're looking for that rare personality that has crossover appeal in their home community and in the larger community at general, because working with people is what it takes to get things done in this country today, and understanding building coalitions.
So, George, let's go back now. We're going to go back decades. How is it that you found yourself a conservative?
I've always been a conservative. So it wasn't a change that came over me. It's just always been my belief. Growing up in a very traditional family, a mother, father, sisters, and brothers, we just always had conservative beliefs, church on Sunday. So it's nothing new. What has happened is that the Democratic Party has pretended that they're a conservative party, and they're not. They've only cared about one issue over the last probably 8 years. They haven't cared about developing the country. They haven't cared about jobs. They haven't cared about bringing peace to the country. They haven't cared about any economic development in low-income areas. And that's part of the problem where we fail. We have not done any economic development in low-income communities. We should not just still have ghettos and barrios in 2017. It's just amazing that we do.
So you are a resident of the District of Columbia?
I am a resident of Florida and also of Washington, D.C. So I'm kind of back and forth between both places.
And as the senator always shares with me, that the District of Columbia is overwhelmingly and inordinately Democrat. So
yep.
How does your message get resonated there?
Well, you have to talk about opportunity. And the reason Washington is Democratic, overwhelmingly Democratic, is because most of the people who live there came from somewhere else. They're not actual city residents. There's really two Washingtons. There's a federal city, and the federal government has a way of not hiring a local folks. And then there's a city where people just come in as transient, and they just take the job. They just take any job, the federal job offers. So the federal city is really full of people who aren't even from Washington. And every time the administration changes, that's where those folks come from, and they come with their liberal agendas. So since you've had a Democratic president for the last 8 years, you've built up a city now, the federal city, of people who have come from other places. They're all liberal.
And how are you looked at as you walk down the streets and do what you do, and you and your wife especially?
We're looked at with an admiration, actually. We get a lot of admiration of people thanking us for doing what we do.
And are you aware of Senator Brown's work on getting the District of Columbia the right to vote?
I have been working on that issue. I've been working on for a long time. It started under Congressman Fauntroy when I was a child. And actually, it came very close to happening before, maybe 30 years ago, and it just didn't gain any ground. I think the people in Washington, D.C. should have the right to well, we don't have a representative. We have a representative that can introduce legislation but cannot vote. Mm-hmm. We do not have two senators, but if we were actually giving that right, we would have two senators in an area that has a population of about 600,000 people, which is pretty much the average congressional district, and we would have one representative. And the people of Washington, D.C. do not have that, but they do have taxation without representation.
Right. Which is always one of the things that blows my mind, actually. So I am sympathetic to the cause, I have to say. So, George, let's go back in just to yesterday and what happened with the alt-right and the protesting and the violence. How does that make you feel, and what are your thoughts about that?
One, and this might be unusual, I'm confused, because I think that some people came ready to do violence. That's the first thing, which is really awful. If you came to a protest ready to be violent, that's not what you're supposed to be protesting, no matter what your group is. Number two, do not use racism or discrimination as an excuse to do your violence. It's really confusing when you have two different white groups angry at each other over discrimination against blacks, and there weren't a lot of blacks there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking at it, wait a minute, where are the blacks? We're there. Don't blame that on me. That's hate in your heart. That's not hate in my heart. So don't blame your hatred on discrimination against blacks, or you don't like this group, or you don't. You just had hate in your heart, and you were looking for a way to express your hatred. So all I can do is pray and pray and pray, and I posted that on Twitter. I don't know how we do anything except pray for these people to get the hatred out of their heart, because they have some other issues that are going on. It has nothing to do with racism or discrimination. There's no affirmative action that took a job from them, so there's no way they could be angry about that. It's very hard to discriminate today against jobs. If you're qualified, you should be qualified. Is there still discrimination? Yes, but that's what the book Discusses Colorblind talks about. I talk about the ways to rate the discrimination you're going to face and how to deal with it, so that you know if you're going into a situation where you may face some discrimination, like trying to get a bank loan for a house, how do you deal with that? How do you correct it and make it so that it's less discrimination? So whenever I look at a situation, I don't look at it as a racial situation first. I look at it, am I qualified? Am I overqualified? Should I have this opportunity? And if God blesses me with the opportunity, am I going to do well with it? So, and then racism is the last thing I would blame any problem on.
So knowing what you know, but hearing what is shared, what biggest piece of misinformation could you debunk to get folks to understand what it is that you're trying to do and how much of in the minority you are?
Well, we are in the minority, but here's the thing. The swing vote in every state election from here on out, 2018 and 2020, is going to be decided by minorities, mainly women minorities. If you have the minority vote ever gets up to 50 to 80%, then we will have equal representation. But minorities are not voting at 80% or 50%. They're voting at 20%. And then they're having pity parties about what's wrong with their city, what's wrong with their town, what's wrong with their neighborhood, because some people have grown so comfortable in their poverty, they really don't want to fix it. So the first way to fix your poverty and your information... I'm sorry, I got a motorcycle going by. The first way to fix your information is to get out and vote. Voting is free. I'm confused by people who don't vote when something's free. And if you don't vote, you really don't have the right to complain about bad schools or lack of education or opportunity, because you just gave away your free right. So if the biggest message I'd like to get out there is for all minorities to vote. vote as much as you can, and watch the change happen when these leaders see that your community is voting at 50% or 60% turnout.
Once these
politicians see that minorities are voting at 50 or 60%, there will be a lot of real economic development. There'll be a lot of changes within the schools, public, charter, and private, and people, opportunities will open up.
Do you identify with a party, George? And if so, do you share that?
Yes, we are Republican. We identify with the Republican Party. But we identify with the Republican Party in a way that we're with you. We're with the Republican Party, but we want you to have some changes. And one of the ways we want to change is we got to make sure that we have representation that's fair. And there are some Republicans I don't agree with. There are some rhinos that I don't like. But, you know, hopefully we can either get rid of those rhinos and become a conservative party that we promised that we're going to be in terms of lower taxes. Or we can just keep moving. But right now we've got John McCain, who's the leader of the rhinos, and we've got 4 years to deal with him.
And how do you think, in your estimation, that the rhinos are hurting the party?
The rhinos are hurting the party because the rhinos are no different from the Democrats. How do you explain this? The rhinos and the Democrats have the preconceived notion of minorities can't achieve. That's a preconceived Democratic notion, and that's something that the rhinos really don't really agree with the Democrats on. The conservatives I deal with, and a lot of people are confused. When I deal with conservatives, or I deal with different folks with different religious groups, the minute they understand that we're talking about opportunity, they're wide open to our ideas. They're wide open to working with us. I think our support group among Black Pack is probably 70% white and 30% Black. So it's a group that brings people together, and everybody gets it. People who are associated with us get it.
So for folks who think that, because I know as a Republican, I've always been told that I have no heart and that the Democrats are the ones that have the heart. And I'm always the one that says, I was raised Roman Catholic, and we were always taught to always do unto others and the golden rule and et cetera. And so I said, I am all for handouts, but not for dependency. And so that's why I think there are people who hit hard times, and they do need that stopgap or that Band-Aid. But then we need to empower them either with new skills or new information so that we can not create the cycle of dependency and generations of dependency. And
correct.
I don't know how you think that can be changed, because that has been the norm for decades now.
Well, it is. And one of the things, that's when it comes back to education opportunity. Of course, there are times when people have a hard time. When veterans are returning, they have a tough time. They need some help getting back into the community, getting transferring back, especially if you've been through a war zone and you need a little bit of extra help to go forward. Because, again, one of the things we have is a high level of veteran suicide. And that's got to be something that's got to be dealt with in the mental health issues. We can't just push those issues under the rug. But in terms of dealing with generational poverty, it's about having the example that, yes, you can do better. Is it going to be hard? And that's why one of the reasons I wrote my first book, which is The Angry Black Man's Guide to Success, that I understand the anger that eats at you on the inside, that you think everything's against you and everything's keeping you down, or the man is holding you down. But if you read through that book, you'll see how to deal with that anger that's inside of you and turn it into drive and ambition. And a lot of it has to do with changing the music that you listen to, changing the show that you watch. There was a skit I just thought about. This is a skit called Black Acting School by a director. It was his first movie, and it was done as a comedy. In the movie, it's called Hollywood Shuffle. It was about the stereotypes that black actors get in the movies. If you want to be a star, these are the roles that you get. And there's one skit in there called Black Acting School, and I sent it to my older daughters so that they could see that. But I was thinking about that because there's a something that shows up on my Twitter. I think it's called it's a new TV show on HBO or one of those networks, and it shows a black guy in a suit sitting in a jail cell. And I'm thinking, wow, we're still getting those roles. And the movie was Hollywood Shuffle was made in the 70s as a comedy by Robert Townsend, the director Robert Townsend. He also did The Five Heartbeats. But his first movie was called Hollywood Shuffle, and it showed this stereotypical roles that blacks were getting. And if you watch it, it says, I played a slave in 3 drug dealers. And then, wow. And then you look at the movies that they're putting back, that they're putting out in 2017, and it's called, it's a new movie on HBO, it's called Empire, that's the name of it, Empire. And it shows us participating in criminal roles again. And I'm like, and, I don't want to watch this anymore.
Right. I've seen this show already.
Yeah, you've seen it already? So here we are playing roles that we joked about in the 70s, and it seems like those are the only roles that black people can get.
Yikes.
can we have any positive stereotypes? Anything? Can we have a doctor, a lawyer, maybe a real estate developer or something? It's just horrible. And you've got to really drain yourself of those stereotypes and those beliefs to get the anger out.
So let's talk about what you have been doing for so long with your activism, and one of the major successes that you had with Jeb Bush's campaign is related to a comment that you just made, that the more that the minorities get out and vote, the better, and you were responsible for a huge increase in minority voter turnout. Can you talk about how you went about that and how you were so successful?
Well, with Jeb Bush, the first time he ran and his brother ran for governor of Texas, Jeb Bush lost because he made this comment that was some reporter asked, what are you going to do for blacks? He said nothing. And that was the wrong thing to do. So he went back and he studied what he did wrong, and he got involved in charter schools, an opportunity. And he really started joining the charter school board, helping on education. And he made that a hallmark of his second run for president. So once we explain that charter schools are not against public schools, but it's an alternative so that your child can get a better education in a smaller, more caring atmosphere. That was enough to propel Jeb Bush to win his second term. And not only did he do that, he also kept a promise to bring back the Florida A&M Law School, which had been transferred to Florida State. And he brought it back to Florida A&M. It was one of the first things he did was reestablish the law school at Florida A&M University. So Jeb Bush made education his hallmark, and a lot of people don't understand the things that he did for education. Now, I know folks are upset about what civil rights is going to be done with education if you don't use race to get into a school. But one of the other things Jeb Bush did is he made it so that if you were in the top 10 or 20% of your class, you were guaranteed admission to a Florida university, regardless of your grade. So now the public schools had to improve, because if you were going to graduate in the top 20%, you were going to get a university, So you can guarantee people coming from a lower income area will still get into a university. And that's improved education in Florida. I think that's what we're going to end up going to, is if you're in the top 10 or 20%, no matter where your school is located, you're going to be guaranteed admission to school. You're still going to have to compete and do well in that university, but it will get you in the door.
So talk about, though, your success to your success. I mean, I get it that the message was important and it was empowering and it was also significant, but you and your organization got the minority vote out.
We got the minority vote out for Jeb because we took the message to the minority community. We also did it for Rick Scott. We also did it for, Rick Scott beat a Democrat by, I think, 12,000 votes. We just did it in Atlanta with Karen Handel. She won by 14,000 votes. We got minority women behind Karen Handel because we shared Karen's story. She's the first woman elected to Congress from Georgia. Again, that was history. So we explained that. That was part of our message, that she's a good woman, she deserves this job, She deserves this opportunity, and we made her the first woman congressman in Georgia. So it's not just Jeb Bush. It goes into Rick Scott. We assisted Rick Scott with his turnout. And one of the other things, the biggest thing we did, was we increased black votes for Jeb Bush, not for Jeb Bush, for President Trump, from 5% to 11%. We built a coalition with the Blacks for Trump and took them around the country where we were cheering for Trump, and we were explaining that a better economy lifts all boats. If we have a better economy, there's going to be more opportunity. And I didn't believe that Hillary Clinton was going to give us a better economy. I knew that Mr. Trump was going to give us a better economy. And one of the great things about Donald Trump is this guy never quit. He's had failures that would have ruined other people. But one of the things I admire about him is his failures never define him. He just keeps on like a little Energizer bunny, keeps on going until he gets it right. And that's one of the things that we have to have in our life. We got to just keep on going until we get it right. So I like how we turned around Jeb Bush. We did a great job with Rick Scott against Charlie Crist. Karen Handel was a great opportunity for us in Georgia. So now we just use our ability to get out to vote in minority communities. One of the things that's most important is we go into the community to ask for the vote, which a lot of politicians don't do. They're scared to do it because their campaign managers and their campaign directors tell them that it's not worth the investment, and that's wrong. For example, for Karen Handel, the Republican Party and all the PACs spent somewhere in the neighborhood of $220 per vote. We spent, with our organization, somewhere closer to a dollar per vote.
Really?
Yeah. So
because you were boots on the ground?
We're boots on the ground. We spent about a dollar per vote from the vote that we generate for candidates. And a lot of these campaigns are spending $200, $300 per vote. By the time they spend money on television, which is extremely expensive, a lot of these campaigns are spending $200 per vote. And a lot of those votes that they're spending the money on, they already have. We're spending money on the swing voters. And it's costing us a dollar per vote to get out those swing voters. And we're very successful at it because we talk to them, we motivate them. We actually get them to participate in the campaigns. We have them campaign with us, something that they've never been asked to do before. Hey, would you knock on doors with me? Sure. Hey, would you wave some signs on this corner for us? Yes. So not only do we ask for their vote, we ask for their participation.
So tell me this too, George. The folks that you're dealing with, are they already registered to vote? And if so, are you having the opportunity to have them switch their registration? Or how do you work in terms of the grassroots on that level?
One of the things we just started this year, and I'm so glad you asked me to bring it up, we are registered as a third-party registration organization in Florida. And we can now register people to vote in Florida, Georgia, Virginia, Pennsylvania, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana. So we're going to nationwide to create an organization that doesn't just ask people for their vote, but now we're doing voter registration. We did not do that last year. This is a new thing that we're doing, and we're starting it this year before 2018 so that we can register new voters and be the first to contact those new voters and keep those voters loyal to the Republican Party. So we're working very hard in Florida. We have 55,000 black Republicans in Florida, 250 black independents. So we're approaching those 250 black independents and having them switch their party to the Republican Party so they can vote in the primary. So we're actually doing voter registration in Florida for the first time ever and in all these other states.
Now, how does that work that you got that approved? Because you're in seven states?
Well, we're a 501c4, and we're allowed to do voter education. Now, we can't really tell you who to vote for, but we can register you and register your party. But when we do our voter education and our voter engagement programs to register new voters, we can present to you that we're working with conservative voters, and here are our beliefs, and we would like for you to register Republican. Now, whether you do it or not is up to you, but is the organization that's doing the voter registration is very important. It is very, very important to do voter registration and to get new voters, because every election from here on out on a statewide basis is going to be so close. Our country's kind of split right now, and we need to heal it.
And how do you think, because that's something the senator and I always talk about, because he says that the Democrat Party is just saying resist, and I don't know that the Republicans are getting back to basics. I think that they're running a little bit ahead and maybe making some assumptions, and I'm looking for us to get back to what President Lincoln did to the Republican Party. Where do you see that dialogue headed?
I hope that we can do it through unity. I hope that we can do it through our ideals, through talking about opportunities, through talking about lower taxes, through talking about creating more business opportunities in lower-income communities and bringing people together. The best crime prevention is a job. So if we can bring jobs back and bring the economy back, we won't have a high crime rate. But then one of the other things we've got in a lot of urban areas like St. Louis and Chicago, we've let the Wild Wild West mentality come in. And the music that's coming in with these folks is that they're listening to is just so disrespectful. They don't see another lifestyle. So there's a lot of work to do in the urban areas in the Chicago or East St. Louis that we've got to go into, and we're the group that's brave enough to do it.
And when you say we, you're speaking specifically about Black Pack.
Black Pack, yes.
And how are you getting your funding?
We do a lot of email funding. We need donations all the time through our website, and it's www.blackpack.com. And you can click the donate button and send your donations right there. You'll get a thank you and a receipt, and you'll also start getting a lot of information about what we've been doing around the country. So, yes, we do a lot of fundraisers. As a matter of fact, I think we're going to probably do a fundraiser in Minnesota, and hopefully we can get out to California and do something large out there. But a lot of it is just word of mouth with pastors and who invite us to services, and they let us say a few words because they believe in our work. Do we need a lot of funding? Yes, we do. We're competing against millions and millions going into the Democratic Party that are looking to, I mean, the Democratic Party is buying gas cars for people to buy their vote. I shouldn't say that on the air, but that's one of the things that they do.
I have not heard that.
So,
now, you're laughing at the preposterousness of that, or that it's actually being done?
Yes. No, it's actually being done. So we've got a lot to compete against because there's a lot of misinformation. We've got to compete against the misinformation. And the Democrats ran John Ossoff against Karen Handel. Karen Handel is much more qualified. Mr. Ossoff didn't even live in the district, couldn't even vote for himself. Yet the Democratic Party put $50 million behind this gentleman to win a congressional seat. I mean, $50 million for a gentleman who couldn't even vote for himself. That's just amazing what the Democrats will spend to stay in power. And that's our competition. And right now we're 4-0 in special elections. I hope we stay that way. We have another election in Alabama on Tuesday. That's a primary, so we'll probably end up with a very qualified Republican candidate for Senate. And I think the next two elections, governor elections, is Virginia and New Jersey. And hopefully we can keep New Jersey and Virginia as Republican in Republican hands.
Now, was Condoleezza Rice involved at all with the Birmingham elections?
No. I didn't see her there. Maybe she was.
I'm just asking because I know that's where she's from. So I was wondering if she's still interested.
We're doing a lot of grassroots, and we did a ton of grassroots there, and we didn't see her there. She's probably busy.
I'm sure.
A lot on her plate.
Yes, of course. So tell me about my state, California, that has been – the blue keeps running deeper and darker. No one even bothers to campaign here, Democrat or Republican, really, because we're an ATM for Republicans just to raise money. But
it is.
No one wants to spend the time because of how inordinately blue we are. And you mentioned California when you were talking about maybe coming out.
Is that there's a lot of secret Republicans there. I talked to Republicans in Compton who are tired of the Democrats running Compton and running it as a ghetto. There are a lot of secret Republicans who are tired of being broke all the time in the California budget and the California legislature, just acting like it's a big ATM, including Arnold Schwarzenegger. Mm-hmm. So you know you can elect a Republican governor. It's been done before. But on the local level, the Republicans are coming out. But I find that there's a lot of secret Republicans. They don't want to identify themselves as Republicans, especially those that work around Los Angeles in the movie industry, because there's a
correct.
Lot of movie industry.
That's
so they don't
correct.
Want to identify themselves because they're afraid to lose their job or be ostracized.
So here's what I've seen with the Republicans that I know, and they're doing exactly what you're saying. We have something called decline to state, and that's where they're going.
Okay.
So they don't want to have the R behind their name for the reasons that you just illuminated or enumerated. But then we, of course, now have two with our primaries. It's the two top vote getters. So often the only choice was a Democrat for me. Because those were the two who got, you know, like Loretta Sanchez and her name's escaping me, our former Attorney General, Kamala Harris. Those were the only two choices.
And I follow Kamala Harris. I think she's getting more liberal by the day.
Is that possible? If you've just tuned into the program, we've been speaking with George T. Farrell, who has founded an organization that's called Real Black Pack is his Twitter handle, but it's called Black Pack, and it's BLAKPAC. It's also .com and .GOP. And he wrote in 2007 a book called The Angry Black Man Guide to Success, and then followed it up last year in 2016 with Success is Colorblind. So we just had a technical issue. As he mentioned, he's on his way back from Birmingham, Alabama, doing some grassroots efforts, and that's what happened. So he's on the road, and we're going to try and get him back. And so if you'd like to join in on the conversation, you may join us at either 888-627-6008, and also you can Skype your comments and questions to BBS Radio 1, because there are two channels here, BBS Radio 1 and BBS Radio 2. My name is Maria Sanchez. Ordinarily, I have our host on the program with us, Senator Michael D. Brown, but he's on vacation, and so that's why it's me and me alone. So my history, if you're not familiar with my careers, was with terrestrial radio, and I did that until 2008 when the economy turned. I had a morning drive program and then an afternoon drive program, and ironically, our program was always about current events, newsmakers, lifestyle, health, parenting, relationships, and very little about politics, because I used to say there's a lot of angry white men who do it really well. I did have political correspondents on the program. They would meet with us once a week, and I always couched them, please don't let folks know about your leanings. Please, let's just represent the facts. Let's be as independent, objective as possible so that we can give people the information and let them make their own decisions. So, ironically, I was a guest on Senator Brown's this program, Shallow Politics, a couple times, because prior to me was his co-host was Kathleen Gomez, and in general, she was a Democrat. Now I believe she's an independent, but in any event, I was a guest on the program twice, and he goes, "You're such a reasonable Republican." And I was like, "Yeah, I'm fiscally conservative, but I'm socially terribly liberal." And so now I find myself here. So we have George back on the line with us. George, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much. I just crossed from Mississippi to Tennessee in a line drop.
I knew it had something to do with the connection. So I was just giving folks, if they hadn't turned in at the beginning, a brief background about your bio again. And
yeah.
I was asking you about advice for the Republicans in California, if you have any.
Start with the lower races, the city council races, the school board races, and work your way out. Those races aren't as expensive. Yeah, I would like to have great voter turnout in those races, but most people ignore them. But that's your best chance to start there and build your coalitions and move your way up. That's how I advise a lot of people. Don't start running for senator or Congress, because those are million-dollar races. And if you're not going to self-fund, don't do it.
So interestingly enough, George, I learned that backwards because I never paid attention to the local races. I always paid attention to the state and the national races and was involved in those campaigns. Then I found myself on the local level about 10 years ago. I started running campaigns for city council. I was the campaign manager. And it was like, dang, it's exactly what you said. You have great influence locally. It's relatively affordable. It's a modest budget. And even though it's like city council for us is nonpartisan, so it's not about what party you are. It's about your ideals or your vision for the community or the city or, you know, seniors or what have you. And yes, you actually make a difference in people's lives that you run into, that you see, that you bank with, that you do business with, that you go to school with, that all that stuff. So I came at it ass backwards, if you will, and I can't help but thank you for sharing that message because that is the way to start.
Let me tell you, I get excited about school board races because I can tell you that the average school board, probably in California, has a $3 billion budget or higher, and that's spent every year. It's not just on the school construction, the teachers, the doctors, the lawyers that represent the school district. There's a lot of money going through school districts on an annual basis, and not only that, what you're finding out now is the school districts control what books your child is reading. What they get. Are they going to get a book that talks about my two dads? Are they going to get a book that talks about Sharia law being the correct law to apply to the United States? Because those people who are on those school boards, they pick those books. And if you have a liberal school board, you're going to get Sharia law being taught. You're going to get books that talk about my two dads, my two moms, my three moms, whatever. You're going to get all these books in your schools that are indoctrinating your children.
So now
the school board is really the most important thing to me.
And since you brought up social issues, this is where I have a parting of the ways, if you will, with the Republican Party, because I'm very conservative fiscally, but I'm very liberal socially. And people are always like, well, then why are you a Republican? And I said, well, I think the tent's big enough to hold us. And believe me, I'm on the left pulling the tent that way.
Because let me make this clear.
Okay.
I don't care if someone's gay or straight or whatever. I don't really care. But I don't want, and this is a conversation I have with my daughters who are older in college. So I don't care, you know, what your friends are. What is the problem is when you want me to think it's normal, and I don't want to think it's normal. So if you want to walk down the street in a thong, whether you're a woman or a man, that's not normal for me. But don't ask me to accept it. Don't put it in my face and ask me to accept it. So there's still some cultural norms that I think that, and I don't judge people. I don't care. I don't care if you want to wear a dress. It doesn't bother me. But don't get mad if it disturbs me.
Well, so let's talk about a woman's right to choose then, too, because I know that's one of your tenets is pro-life.
Yes.
So here's where I diverge. Being raised Roman Catholic, I was always pro-life. Getting older, having children, having a daughter, having friends who had illegal background kind of abortions back in the day.
Yes.
What I have come to now as a woman is I do believe it's murder, but I also believe it's not my decision to make for anybody except for me and my body.
It's not your decision to make, but the state or the federal government should not pay for it either.
Is that your basic complaint, or are you also philosophically against it?
Personally, I'm philosophically against it, but I'm not telling you how to live your life. Again, I don't judge you. I don't judge you. I don't know your situation. I don't know why you made a decision. But I can tell you that the government dollars, federal dollars, state dollars should not go to pay for it. I mean, if they do, where do we stop? If I want to get a facelift, should the government pay for it? breast augmentation, should the government pay for it?
But if you're talking about income
challenge, and I can make
challenged.
The case that those are health, I can make the case that those are health issues.
True, if we're talking about poverty, where that
we're talking
it's
about poverty.
Unaffordable.
Yes, and here's the thing. this is where it gets confused, because the Democratic Party says 94% of black women believe in abortion. It's actually something they just wrote. It was about 2 weeks ago, I thought. It's not true, because blacks and Latins, no matter what their economic status is, will have that child, because they believe that child will bring them hope. Blacks and Latins are having more children than whites. Whites are having 0.7 babies, not enough to sustain. Mm-hmm. Latins and blacks are still having 2.1 to 2.3 child per family. And poor black women and poor Latin women will still have a child. No, because, see, white people, for white people to have a child, they've got, that child has to be planned through the age of 40 to have an IRA. They don't just plan their, you know, they got to get the best elementary school. They got to get it to the right college where their parents went. And then they won't even have a child until the child has an IRA and the grandparents have the estate plan already established.
So, with the college fund.
The college fund. So that's what whites think to their having. They have to plan it perfectly. We just fall in love and have children.
So, George, let's talk about who you're affiliated with, who knows your message, how much, like, in the food chain, are you on the radar with the White House, or are you on the radar with the Senate?
I think I'm on the White House radar, and I'm on the way. I mean, we helped elect Brian Mast in Florida. That's one of the other elections we participated in. He's first-term congressman, double amputee, veteran, great guy. I love him to death. We participated in his election in a very liberal area, in the Palm Beach area, Port St. Lucie area, and got him elected. We're going to help him with his reelection. And a lot of people don't know he's half Mexican on his mother's side. He's a great guy. But we never made that an issue. We just talked about the issues and got him elected.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes our strategy isn't racial. It's about qualification.
Well, was that your approach with Karen Handel and Rick Scott, too?
Yes. Well, Rick Scott was about charter schools. It was about making sure, because we knew that if Charlie Crist was elected, he would pull the funding from charter schools. And charter schools in Florida also fund pre-K education, which is very, very important in low-income communities, because the charter school income is tied to pre-K education. And a lot of small churches operate daycare centers and pre-K that the parents cannot pay for in lower-income areas. So that's one of the reasons that we supported Rick Scott, because we knew that that money for early childhood education would be protected, and that the Democrats would not protect that.
That's a really interesting point, and I'm glad that you got that message out, because I'm sure that was getting lost in all other kind of mudslinging or dirty campaigning or what have you.
Yes.
So how do you really talk about the issues?
Does everybody know about who we are? We talk about the issue. I think a lot of people know who Black Pack is. I don't like tooting our own horn. I like getting the job done and having people discover us through actually getting the job done. I mean, we're a conservative group that's doing voter education and voter registration. We're directly competing with the NAACP. The NAACP doesn't even do voter registration anymore. So we're finding new voters on the conservative side, and people are discovering that we're doing the education and getting people to run for the right office. Instead of running for Senate, let's run for school board. I get excited about that. Plus, school board pays a salary. We don't have a lot of money.
It's not just giving of yourself, huh? There's actually a paycheck involved.
It's a paycheck. But wow. You can also make good decisions.
So tell me, since you have children that are younger in terms of their adulthood, does your message resonate with them, i.e. millennials?
Yes, I believe it does. We have a lot of conservative college Republicans that we're working with. Matter of fact, we have partnered with young Republicans and college Republicans. We're starting a partnership with the Joshua Project, a group of ministers who are in urban areas. We're partnering with the Joshua Project. I'm friends with Niger Ennis. Matter of fact, he sent me an email today I need to respond to. So we work with CORE. In terms of do different congressmen know who I am? I think the entire Florida delegation knows who I am. I believe Karen Handel knows who we are. Does the White House know who we are? Yes. We endorsed President Trump. I believe we endorsed him in March or April of last year before the convention. And he actually signed that endorsement. It has his signature on it. So we endorsed President Trump. I have not got my invitation to the White House, but we're waiting on it. I mean, our primary purpose is to elect blacks and Latins and Asians. And if an invitation to the White House comes, it's great. But if it doesn't come, it's not going to stop what we're doing out here.
Well, so I'm glad to hear that you still have hope, it sounds like, and that you still have enthusiasm. That's evident. And before we close, I want you to talk about, again, your Twitter, your Facebook, and your website. And then if you have a message statement in terms of folks who might be on the fence about what it is that you do, what would be a compelling argument for them to look further into Black Pack?
Please look into Black Pack for yourself. There is a Wikipedia page on me, George T. Farrell, F-A-R-R-E-L-L, where you can read the entire background. You can look at our videos. We have a YouTube channel with a few of our videos that explain what we believe in. And the website is www.blakpac.com. Please read the website, and you'll learn. We also have a blog tied to that website that shows different positions that we believe in. And again, you can hit the donate button, make the largest donation that you can to keep us on this road trip so that we can continue to stop and share our message in different cities. Our next stop is going to be Minneapolis, Minnesota, where we're going to meet up with former Lieutenant Governor Jennifer Carroll on the 29th of this month. And you'll see that information on our website, too, coming up shortly. So we're going to be doing a lot of stuff. We do a lot of coalition building. We have done things with Diamond and Silk, who are very, 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 very active. As I think you might have seen, I think YouTube shut their channel down recently.
So, I didn't hear about that. That missed me. What happened?
Well, they didn't shut down their channel. They took away their monetization of YouTube, or however they did it.
Right.
We don't do enough YouTube to monetize it, but that's okay. Look for us on Twitter. It's REALBLAKPAC, Real Black Pack. You'll see our tweets every morning. I tweet something positive. Usually Monday through Saturday, we try to tweet a positive message, not so much for the people who read it, but mainly for me to get me going, part of my daily ritual. Sometimes between 7 and 9 a.m., I try to get out a positive message. And then throughout the day, you'll see messages from Black Pack, what we're working on, what we're doing. Where we're going to be, candidates that we like. Three of those candidates are in Virginia, which I expect we're going to go back to. Adam Roosevelt, Laquan Alexander, and Jeff Dove. Three young black millennial men running for office for the state house in Virginia. Very accomplished young men that you're going to love. And like I said, they have that crossover appeal. They don't just appeal to whites, they don't just appeal to blacks, they appeal to everybody. So we love those three young men. There's a couple of people in Maryland that we're going to look at. And again, we're going to focus on making sure that we keep a Republican governor in Virginia and a Republican governor in New Jersey. Those are our next two races that we're going to focus on this year. So if you can make a donation, please do. Keep us going. And what you'll love about us is that we're really out here working. We're really on the ground. We're not just trying to be talking heads appearing on CNN. That'd be great, but it's not what we're about. We're about actually doing the work to recruit conservative voters and get people to the polls.
Wow. Well, that's ambitious, and obviously you put your money where your mouth is, and you walk the walk and talk the talk. I mean, I like the fact that you aren't just a dreamer, that you're a doer, and that you do dream, and that you do is also something that's to be admired. So, George, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate, especially since you're en route.
Yes.
So we should keep our eyes on the election in Birmingham, Alabama on Tuesday, correct?
For Tuesday, yes. We should keep our eyes. We're not really endorsing any particular candidate. We just want people to show up and vote. And if you get a chance, you got to go by Bethel Baptist Church. It's on a civil rights tour, and the pastor's name is Thomas Wilder. He gave us a great sermon this morning, and actually met with him yesterday where we talked about the work of Black Pack, and they're going to work with us in Birmingham, Alabama. So they really need some help there, too. It's still the South, but there's still people are getting along. But then again, you have to know people have to come out of their shells and share their feelings and talk and have communication. You can't let the anger or if you think something's holding you back fester inside of you.
I love your message, George, because that actually is, again, hopeful and gives us something to work with. And it's something that we should all hope for. So George T. Farrell, our guest this evening, thank you so much for your time and for all that you do. Blackpack.com and also backpack.gop. George, thank you.
Thank you, Maria. Thank you for having me and have me again. I hope I can come back soon. And we'll get to California and we'll get those people who write those big checks out there in California to write them for California.
Okay. From your mouth to God's ear. And this is Maria Sanchez saying thank you for joining us. Have a great week. If you hear a repurposed program, it's because the staff is taking some much needed time off. And when we get back and we're live, you'll know it. So we'll push it through our social media. You're listening to Shadow Politics on BBS Radio 1. Thank you so much for joining us. In the capital of this nation, 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.